mention that I was here, you'll be seeing me again, and it won't be nearly as pleasant.
You can take your warnings and shove them up your ass, Thrasher. I'm not afraid of you.
He steps back, holding my gaze the entire time.
That's your first mistake. Let's hope it's your only one.
I flip him the double bird, and the asshole has the nerve to laugh at me as he walks out. In a moment, he's gone, and I'm left all alone in an empty bar with nothing but memories to haunt me. A squawk comes from the corner.
Shove it up your ass!
Correction. Memories, Esteban, and, damn it, that stupid ring.
11. I crumple the paper in my hand and toss it on the floor beside the lectern. Cameras click and flash in front of me. Y'all know me. I'm not the type to read some polite statement from my publicist when I can tell you how it really is. A few chuckles come from the crowd of reporters, and my publicist covers her face with a hand. I'm not an eloquent bastard, so I'll keep it short. Sometimes shit doesn't work out the way you plan. That's life. It's what we do when things don't go our way that defines our character. I'm not going to run Amber's name through the mud, so if that's what you're here for, you might as well get a head start on leaving. But I will say this. Just because she chose someone else doesn't make him the better man. You want to know more about how I'm feeling? Pick up my next record. I back away from the lectern and walk out of the room before they have a chance to start clamoring with their questions. Once I'm out in the hall, Charity, my publicist, steps forward and announces that the press conference is over. Both Nick's heavier footfalls and the click of her heels follow behind me within moments.
Were you trying to give me a heart attack when you decided not to read that statement?
Charity's voice is higher pitched than normal, which usually means she's trying not to lose her shit. I shoot her a look, one eyebrow raised. Seriously? You actually expected me to read that canned statement? You have met me before, right? Nick waves at the door to an empty office, and we all step inside as the reporters spill into the hallway. Once he shuts the door, he crosses his arms over his chest.
I think he nailed it. They'll be slavering to get their hands on the next album, which means Boone can dry his eyes about this Amber mess on a nice fat pile of cash.
Again, it's always about the money with Nick. At least I can count on one thing that never changes. But as for the next album, hell, I told them that's where they'd find out what I'm feeling, but the truth is, I don't feel a damned thing right now. I'm totally empty, devoid of emotion. Maybe it's self-preservation, but I've got nothing to fuel the creative beast. At least, nothing but bruised pride and regret. My new phone buzzes in my pocket and I pull it out. Ma. She must be watching the news. Nick and Charity are debating something, so I step away and answer. Hey, Ma, how's it going?
I saw your press conference. Baby boy, I'm sorry you're dealing with this, but you handled it like a champ.
Just said what I needed to say.
I know. And I know you don't want to hear this, but I think this whole mess is the Lord's way of ensuring you didn't make a mistake that would stick with you for the rest of your life.
I let her words roll around in my brain before I respond.
Since when have you thought me marrying Amber was a mistake?
My folks were reserved when I told them about my plan, but neither of them came out and said it was a bad idea. Now that I think back on it, maybe I should have taken more time to think about their reactions.
I didn't say it was a mistake. She was a nice girl, but...
What, Ma? Just tell me.
Just tell him, woman. You should have told him earlier.
My dad's voice comes over the phone, and I picture him standing beside Ma in the kitchen while she calls me. She pauses for a moment before she drops the bomb.
Amber made it pretty clear that she didn't want kids the last time you brought her around.
The confession hits me like a knife to the chest because having kids is really fucking important to me. I thought the last time we talked about it, Amber was on the same page, that we both wanted to start a family while we were still young enough to enjoy doing all the shit kids want to do.
Jesus Christ. How much of what she said was bullshit?
I clear my throat.
She really said that?
I'm sorry, Boone. I was hoping you two would work it out if you went through with asking her, but she started rambling about wanting to start acting and how she couldn't ruin her figure with kids.
I clench my teeth as the knife twists.
I gotta go, Ma.
Boone, I'll talk to you later. Love you both. I hang up without letting her say goodbye.
I'm such a fucking chump. After I shoved my phone back in my pocket, I stalk back to Nick and Charity. We're done, right? They both nod. Then I'm getting out of here.
Try to lay low and let it all blow over, Charity says.
And write that damned record, Nick adds. Predictable responses from each of them. I turn to leave the room, but Charity stops me with a hand on my arm.
I know you probably don't want to hear this, but it would be a good idea to avoid being seen with any women for a while. I think you can make the most of this by playing up the media's sympathy. If you go out and start banging every girl in sight, they probably won't hold it against you, but it's not going to get you the kind of response we want. Your relationship with Amber really cleaned up that man whore image you had, so let's try to keep it that way for as long as we can.
When Nick groans, I crane my head to meet her gaze. Are you seriously telling me what to do with my private life right now? Charity lifts her hand and holds it up, palm out.
No, not at all. But I'm telling you that public perception matters. You can screw whoever you want in private, but the paparazzi are going to be watching you close for a while, ready to get the scoop on who Boone Thrasher is going to date next. I'm just saying that we can play this in a way that boosts your career and doesn't tarnish the image you've shined up, so why not do it?
I know it's Charity's job to look out for me and my image, but right now her instructions are the last thing I want to hear. I don't bother responding as I stride from the room. Nick follows me out. The SUV is already waiting to take you home. If you want me to get you some company, just say the word. Charity doesn't need to know shit. I stop in the middle of the hallway and Nick almost runs into me. With my voice pitched low, I deliver my reply. There has never been a time in my life, even before I had enough money to buy and sell you, that I needed help getting a woman. You might still think I'm a dumb hick, but I'm a dumb hick who doesn't have a problem getting laid. You get me? Nick nods. Sorry, man. I shake my head and he goes silent as I leave. I love my life. Really, I fucking do. But there are days like today when I wish I could walk away from it all. Trade it for a simple existence where I work 8 to 5 with my dad and brother in their small engine repair shop and coach Little League during the summer. Maybe meet up with buddies at the bar every Friday night for a beer. The life I would have had. But as I climb into a blacked-out Cadillac Escalade and the driver pulls away through a crowd of flashing cameras waiting on the sidewalk, I think about everything I sacrificed to have this opportunity. The birthdays and holidays with my family I missed because I didn't have money to get home and was too proud to ask for help. Those nights I spent choking on smoke and hoping I'd make enough in tips to eat the next day. The days I spent living in my car because I didn't have a couch at someone's place to crash on. All that would be for nothing if I walked away. And what's more, I know I could never forgive myself for wasting what I've been lucky enough to achieve. And then I think about that punk kid with more balls than talent who headed to Nashville with nothing but a guitar and a crazy-ass dream. So what if the media hounds me for every detail of my personal life? He'd tell me to suck it up, and who the hell cares that nothing is sacred when you live your life on a stage for the world to watch? He'd tell me to give them the best damn show I can, because I worked too hard and gave up too much to do anything else. 35 minutes later, when we roll up to the gates of my house, I decide that punk kid is right. I'm Boone Thrasher, and nobody dictates my future but me.
12. It's Wednesday, and the clock on my phone just flipped over to 11:45, which means I've got exactly 15 minutes before I'm late for lunch with Pop. My javelin doesn't like being pushed to her limit, so there's still a chance I'm going to be late, which will no doubt earn some kind of snide comment from him. Does it make me a terrible daughter that I'm glad I only see him once a week now? When he lived in the apartment above the bar, every day was soaked in bitterness and anger, and too many of them included a stinging cheek from the back of his hand. I'm not happy he took that tumble down the stairs, broke his leg, and had to spend time in a rehab center. God knows I can barely afford the payments on the medical bills that come every month, but getting him out of my space gave me the buffer I've been needing for a long time. I pull into the parking lot of the tiny diner where we always meet. He can walk here from the senior living community where he's living now. Another bill that the profits from the bar can barely cover, and my savings account is running dry from making up the difference. I stare at the diner for a solid 30 seconds before I finally climb out of my car, giving her an extra pat for delivering me safely and not dying on the side of the road somewhere, and head inside. Pop is already waiting at the same booth he takes every week, a cup of steaming coffee sitting in front of him on the red Formica table. As soon as I slide onto the yellow bench seat across from him, Lisa, our regular waitress, stops by our table.
What can I get you, hon?
Water, please.
I'll have the tuna melt on rye, he says to her before he even greets me.
Lisa looks to me.
Regular for you too?
I glance up at the board where the specials are written. Chicken pot pie.
I'll have the special instead.
With a nod, she swirls away, calling out the order to the kitchen. Hey, Pop, how's it going? His big hands, the ones that never held the seat of my bike as I learned to ride without training wheels, but did teach me how to properly build a pint of Guinness, wrap around the mug.
It's going. My next-door neighbor's dog won't quit its yapping, so I ain't been sleeping real well lately.
Did you talk to the manager about it? He gives me a short nod.
Yeah, she says she'll take care of it, but I don't know when that'll be.
It's on the tip of my tongue to ask him if he's changed his mind about AA, but when he coughs, I catch a whiff of cigarettes and malty beer. It's always 5 o'clock somewhere.
Anything else new?
He lifts his coffee to his lips and takes a sip before setting it down, and his bloodshot gray eyes meet mine.
Yeah, Brandy came to see me yesterday. Said you're running the bar into the ground and don't want me to know about it.
That tattletale bitch. I keep my tone even. Is that right? He nods, his eyebrows drawing together.
You hiding shit from me, Rip?
I have to tell him something. I knit my fingers together in my lap and squeeze.
Sales have been slow. We haven't had a lot of customers. But I've got some ideas on how to get more people through the door. I've been thinking that if I start an open mic night, maybe get a few big names in to kick it off, I can really draw a crowd. Maybe even charge a cover.
My dad's expression goes dark, and his hand clenches the mug.
Big names? You gonna offer to fuck 'em too?
The swipe is quick and sharp. I should have expected it, but I wasn't prepared. Especially since it sounded for a half second like he gave a shit about how the bar was doing. He stares at me as Lisa returns with my water, setting it down on the table with a quick mention that our food will be right up. I wait until she's gone to bite out a reply.
No. Oh, yeah? So you mean female big names? You know a lot of those these days. Because Brandy said that the only ones who come sniffing around are looking to get you on your back.
Is there a special word for killing a cousin? Because Brandy is dead.
Brandy talks a lot of shit, Pop. I wouldn't give a whole lot of weight to her words. She barely shows up for work even when she's scheduled, so it's not like she knows what's happening.
I'm the one spending damn near 24 hours a day in that building, making sure the take can cover all the bills, including your apartment and your 12-pack-a-day habit.
And when it can't, huh? Where's that money coming from, Rip? Your pocket?
Yeah, my savings account, which is almost drained.
So what are you gonna do next? Find some rich guy to start picking up the slack? Because we both know that's what your ma-
Stop. Right there. Don't you dare say another word because I will walk out right now and you won't see me again.
I start to slide out of the booth, but my dad calls my bluff.
Oh, yeah? You gonna leave the bar behind, too? Because you walk out of here right now, you're gonna kiss that place goodbye. You'd be just like your ma, abandoning the family.
His statement is a slap to the face, momentarily stealing my breath. I'm the one shedding blood, sweat, and tears to try to keep the bar going. Pop doesn't lift a damned finger. All the things I want to say scramble up my throat until I nearly choke on them. Pop knows I won't walk away, knows that every memory I have of Mama is tied up in that place, whether good, horrible, or otherwise, and I don't know how to let go of the only pieces of her I have left. I drop back into my seat just in time for Lisa to bring our lunches to the table.
Is there anything else I can get you?
The first thought that comes into my brain is a new life.
but that's not what she means. I'm all set, thanks. My polite tone sounds forced, even to me.
I'll take a bud, in a can.
And that's a great indicator for how the rest of our lunch is going to go. Downhill. 13. When I leave the diner, I'm praying that my next stop isn't going to be nearly as unpleasant, but part of me already knows that's a naive hope. Stanley Mullins was the accountant for the bar back when my parents were first able to hire one. Now it's his son, Stan Mullins Jr., who handles the books, but he does it out of the same office his dad did for years. When I pull into the parking lot, I'm already drained from lunch with Pop. I know that a smart woman would walk away from the bar and start over somewhere else, but I can't. Not just because I don't know how to let go, but because everything I have is tied up in that place. Nearly every dollar in my savings account has been loaned to cover expenses. I live rent-free upstairs, and I haven't taken a paycheck in long enough to make me question my own sanity. The bottom line? If I walk away from the fishbowl, I've got about $300 to my name and a stack of promissory notes that will never get paid unless I'm there to see it happen. Stan's receptionist takes me back to his office rather than a conference room, and my brain is going in too many different directions to realize this may not be a good sign. Stan rises from behind the desk and holds out a hand.
Hey, Ripley, you look as beautiful as ever.
Being called beautiful always mystifies me because it's such a pointless trait. I didn't do anything to earn my thick brown hair, distinctive gray eyes, or symmetrical features, and they sure haven't done me any good. So I always shrug it off when someone mentions my looks. I slide my hand into Stan's, and his grip lasts a few seconds longer than normal. That's when anxiety sets in. How bad is it, Stan? He had a call with a few bankers this morning, one that he asked me to sit out so they could talk numbers plainly.
You might want to have a seat.
I plop down into a plush leather chair, trying to read the expression on his face. Nothing I see is promising. How bad? I ask again.
Bad.
It's just a tiny line of credit. You can't tell me that the building and the business aren't enough collateral for 50 grand. My accountant clears his throat.
Your dad took out another mortgage on the building earlier this year.
I blink twice as if that's going to help me comprehend what Stan just said.
What?
What mortgage? We own that building free and clear. Stan shakes his head.
No, you don't. And I take it he never bothered to mention that fact to you.
Slouching back in the chair, I lift a hand to my face and pinch the bridge of my nose. How much? I whisper.
100,000.
My mouth drops open and my hand hits my lap. You've got to be joking. What did he use it for? It sure didn't go toward paying off his hospital bills or any of the bar expenses. He lives in that senior community, which I pay for. What else? A thought dawns on me, one I'm afraid to give credence to by speaking it aloud. He wouldn't.
You can't think of anything else he would have used the money for? Booze? Gambling? Drugs?
Stan asks. I'm not proud, but I answer. I pay for the booze. As far as I know, he doesn't gamble. He's never done drugs beyond smoking the occasional joint.
So where would the money go?
I reply with another question. Has he at least been making payments on the mortgage? Stan's expression turns rueful.
He was. But he stopped 2 months ago.
When he asked for an extra $500 every month, and I told him I couldn't spare it. God, the hits keep coming. Is it already in foreclosure? Stan shakes his head.
No, I called the lender this morning, as soon as I got off the phone with the other bankers, and I did you a favor. I told them your dad has been having some issues and has become more forgetful, and the payments never got mailed. I paid them over the phone, Ripley. You're current now, and they're not going to foreclose as long as you keep writing them a check every month.
You can't squeeze blood from a turnip, Stan. You've seen the numbers. My budget can't handle another $500 a month. Stan leans back in his chair, crossing an ankle over his knee.
I know.
But he doesn't know, no. I doubt Stan has ever had to worry about where he could find an extra $500, not when he slid right into Daddy's profitable accounting firm, where the vast majority of clients don't have as much trouble paying their bills as the fishbowl. What am I gonna do?
Look, you've got a few options.
At the word options, I sit up straighter. Like what? Because I'm pretty sure I've considered every damn option I could have. Stan nods and leans forward, resting both elbows on the desk.
Can you get more customers in the door? Is there any way you can increase receipts at all?
I'm trying. I wanted to start some new marketing and promo, but that takes money. And when I told Pop I was thinking about asking a few friends to come in and play so I could charge a cover, he about lost his shit.
Stan knows all about my family's dirty laundry, along with the fact that the most traffic I get on a weekend is the gawkers who come in with their guidebooks, peek into the bathroom, and leave without buying a single drink.
But how do I keep them out if there's a possibility they'll even spend $2 on a bottle of water? I'm desperate enough that I can't.
Look, Ripley, we've known each other a long time, and you know I've always had a thing for you, right?
I jerk my gaze up to meet Stan's.
What? Come on, Ripley. You know that practically every guy that meets you goes home thinking about what it'd be like to have all that fire in his bed.
The chicken pot pie I had for lunch flips in my stomach.
Are you trying to make a point here, Stan? Because this is not helping matters. All I'm saying is that if you really want my help, I'm happy to give it. And I don't think what I want from you would be any hardship on your part.
My mouth drops open for the second time since I stepped foot in the office, but I quickly shut it and spring to my feet.
I'm going to pretend you didn't just say that. Come on, Rip. I'm not trying to be crude, but I did just lay out a grand this morning to save your ass, so I think that buys me a little room to speak my mind. Unless you want to work it off a different way.
I swallow back the bile rising in my throat. Stan's not ugly. No. With his pale blonde hair and brown eyes, he's actually attractive in a bland, starched shirt kind of way. That's not what's making me sick. No, it's the picture of his wife and two kids sitting on the credenza behind him, and his assumption that he can throw this offer at me because of who I am.
Go fuck yourself, Stan.
Silently, I add, I'm nothing like my mama.
14. Did you kick him in the balls?
Hope asks as she slides another drink across the bar to me.
When was the last time I was on this side of the equation? Forever ago is all I can come up with, which explains why I'm already buzzed after three drinks. No, I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of having any part of me touch any part of him. I swirl the cocktail straw in the glass, mixing the booze and soda. But I did tell him to go fuck himself.
Hope throws back her head and laughs.
Nice. I bet that wasn't what he was expecting. He comes in here at least once every other week and leaves with his arm around some girl barely old enough to drink.
I jerk my gaze to hers.
Seriously?
Hope, my best friend since bartending school over a decade ago, runs the bar at the White Horse Saloon, one of the most successful honky-tonks in town. It's always packed with tourists hoping to get a glimpse of a few country stars, and the amount of money and alcohol that flows through here in any given week could probably pay off the mortgage I didn't know Pop had taken out.
Dead serious. A few months back, he spent all night flirting with one of my new waitresses, hanging around until she was done with her shift. Not more than 15 minutes after she walked out with him, she comes storming back in, pissed as hell.
I sucked down a swig of my Crown and Coke on the house or I wouldn't be drinking it.
What happened? His M.O. is to get them into his cherry red vet and tell them the party doesn't start until his dick gets sucked. Normally the girls he leaves with are blitzed, so I'm guessing they fall all over themselves to do it. But she was totally sober and told him he could suck his own dick to get the party started.
Burn! I tip back the glass for another sip.
Why'd she go with him to begin with if she wasn't up for that?
Hope leans forward on the bar, her boobs threatening to spill from her low-cut shirt, but I avert my eyes. Apparently, he had blow, and she wanted it. Just not bad enough to blow him. My eyebrows shoot up. Blow as in, yep, Coke, and not the kind you're drinking. But he's an accountant. How does that make any sense? Hope straightens and laughs. Honey, it doesn't matter if he was a priest. Everyone's got a vice. A tourist in one of those straw cowboy hats hollers from down the bar, while Hope's three other bartenders are hustling drinks and putting on a show tossing bottles here and there. Just the thought of taking a chance of breaking one is enough to make me cringe. I gotta sling some more drinks. I'll be back when I can. Wednesday night is the slowest night of the week for the fishbowl, which makes it perfect for my one day off. Before my last boyfriend and I broke up, I'd usually stay at his place on Wednesdays, but that ended months ago. He was pissed I couldn't make more time for him, and I thought he was playing a double standard since he was gone every weekend playing drums with different bands, trying to make it big. Hope used to give me shit about Joey, saying I was bending my anti-celebrity rule, but I disagreed wholeheartedly. Sure, he'd get women hitting on him just like any band member did, but it wasn't because of who he was. It was only because they saw him on stage. It's not like anyone actually knew his name when they saw him play, and certainly no one would ever remember him 5 minutes after he stepped away from his drum kit. I've never quite understood the allure of banging a guy in a band. So what if he's in the spotlight for a few sets? Why does that make him any more attractive than a guy in the crowd buying you drinks and having a good time?
Wow, I didn't expect to see you here. What with you being the anti-fun.
Brandy's smoke-roughened voice cuts into my semi-intoxicated contemplation. What are you doing here? I ask. Her cackle sets me on edge. I swear my aunt must have done drugs or drank while she was pregnant with Brandy, because the girl just isn't right. I want to say it's not her fault, but the nastiness she displays isn't an accident.
Why do you think?
She shoots me a look. And it doesn't take a genius to fill in the blanks. I'm sure there are plenty of clueless tourists here to buy her drinks while she feeds them some bullshit story about trying to make it in Nashville. Cue eye roll. Then I remember I'm pissed at her for a specific reason, instead of my normal general annoyance.
Well, Pop's not here to narc to, so clearly that's not it.
I reach for my drink and tip the rest of it back. Brandy glares at me.
He should know what's happening. It isn't my fault his daughter is a complete screw-up, running the fishbowl into the ground.
Her insult stings when it lands, and I desperately want another drink. Thankfully, Hope spots my anxious look and comes down the bar toward us.
Is there something I can get you, Brandy? Or are you just here to take up space while you wait for some poor bastard to buy you a drink like you do every other time you show up?
Brandy rolls her eyes.
Give me a shot of 151.
Hope's nose wrinkles, and I have to believe mine does the same. Brandy scoffs at both of us.
What? If I'm buying, I gotta make it count. It's not like Ripley pays enough for me to buy the good stuff. Yes, I should have gotten more money out of—
My arm swings out, and I knock my glass over with enough force that a remaining ice cube flies straight into her cleavage.
What the hell?
Brandy screeches, attracting an audience to watch her fish the melting ice from between her mostly exposed boobs. Hope shoots me a questioning look and raises her brows.
I'll tell you later.
She nods.
Another?
Make it a double. And maybe a shot. An apologetic look settles over her features. Hope knows how much putting up with Brandy stretches my patience. Before she turns to make my drink, she ducks her head close to mine.
Babe, you know that any time you want to jump ship and let your pop figure out his own mess, I've got you covered. You could make more in one shift here than you pull down in a week.
And be homeless? I don't mention the part about losing my remaining connection to Ma, because in my current mood, I'll end up being the sad sap at the bar with tears falling into my drink. Hope's answer comes quick, like it's the one she thought out in advance.
I've got a futon with your name on it.
Before I can reply, she slides away and down the bar, grabbing bottles and making drinks. It gives me a minute to realize that I have no idea what I did to deserve such a good friend. Apparently, for once in my life, I got lucky.
Hope is good people.
Oh my God, is that really him?
A woman one stool down from me shouts over the music as she climbs onto the cushion, balancing on her knees. While I'm busy worrying about whether she's going to faceplant on the floor, the atmosphere in the bar changes in an instant. There's only one reason for it, celebrity sighting. The artist on stage pauses mid-song and yells into the microphone,
"Ladies and gentlemen of the White Horse Saloon, please welcome Boone Thrasher to the stage."
15. 1 hour earlier. That's the worst idea you've ever had, I tell Frisco as I lean back into one of the chairs on my porch, my shotgun resting beside me with an empty shell box on the table. Now that the sun has dropped below the horizon, we're done shooting skeet, and Frisco is talking out of his ass. I'm pretty sure that time he wanted to streak through the parking lot in Denver in January was a worse idea. Quarter, my bass guitarist, offers. He'll never live down those pics of his dick. It was cold. Shrinkage, dude. Not fair. That's what George said on Seinfeld, too. Shut up, you assholes. Frisco tucks his shotgun back into its case and cracks a beer. Just hear me out. Nick and Charity told you to lay low, but this whole thing is going to play out on the stage of public opinion. Your fans love you because you don't take shit from anyone. Remember when you called that guy out for shoving that chick in the crowd and had security yank him? You aren't the kind of guy who goes to ground when shit hits the fan. You come out swinging, showing the world what you're made of, and they worship you for it. As much as I want to say he's an idiot, Frisco actually has a point there, Quarter says, popping the top off his beer. So you think showing up on Broadway, walking into a bar, and playing a set like I used to is somehow going to make a difference? Not just any bar on Broadway, the White Horse. It's always packed with all those tourists dying to see someone famous. You step onto that stage and mention you've been having a rough week, and then you play your new single and talk about how the girl you thought would be riding in that 442 with you turned out to have different plans, so you're rolling with the curveball life through you. Frisco's beer sloshes over the lip as he gestures with his hands. Quarter chuckles low. Oh, man, they'll eat that shit up. You'll have so many pairs of panties on that stage by the time you're done. You gotta do it. I don't give a shit about panties on the stage or the women throwing them. Frisco jumps up from his chair. You're Boone fucking Thrasher. You ain't shy about people knowing you've been knocked down. You show them you're tough as hell every time you get back up and tell them to bring it on. No one takes you down and sends you into hiding, especially not Amber Fleet. Frisco's words finally penetrate, because he said exactly what I've been thinking. I don't hole up and lick my wounds. That's not the kind of man I am. I haul my ass up every time it gets kicked and dare the world to throw another punch. A rush of determination fills me, something I haven't felt in months. You're fucking right, that's who I am. Quarter springs out of his chair. So we're going? Yeah, we're fucking going. The crowd parts like the Red Sea, and Frisco, Quarter, and I head for the stage at Broadway's famous White Horse Saloon. The guy on stage, whose set I just cut in on, welcomes me with a huge smile and one hell of an introduction. You sure you're cool, man? I don't want to put you out. His eyes widen. Dude, you're my idol. I've been listening to your album since I was in high school, and now we're standing on the same stage. The kid's speech makes me feel older than my years, but I know he's not trying to insult me. For him, it's truly an honor to be on stage with me, and I'm not going to take that away from him. God knows I've felt like that plenty of times myself with country legends I'm now lucky enough to call friends. What's your name? Theo Sampson. I hold out my hand and shake his. Thanks, Theo. You play any of my songs? Every single one. Then stick around and we'll play one together. His entire face pales before excitement lights up his eyes. You serious? Sure am. He passes me the mic that's still gripped in the fingers of his left hand. Awesome. I'll be at the bar anytime you're ready. Can I borrow your guitar? His eyes widen even further. Dude, of course. Great. Appreciate you, man. Two of the guys on stage are handing over guitars to Frisco and Quarter, but the drummer stays where he is. I flip the mic and speak into it. Let's give it up for Theo Sampson. He keep you guys entertained? The crowd screams. That's what I thought. Give him another year and maybe you'll see him on tour with me. The kid turns around on the way to the bar and he looks like he might lose his shit. He salutes me and keeps walking, right up next to a brunette who looks way too much like the one I haven't been able to stop thinking about. She spins on the stool, her dark hair swinging around her shoulders, and I get a glimpse of her face in the light coming from the bar. It's her, Ripley. Coming here all of a sudden seems like it was the hand of fate or some shit like that. Now I know exactly what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna give the girl who can't stand celebrities a hell of a show. What's up, Nashville? Who's having a good time tonight? The roar of the crowd fills the bar to deafening levels, and I wait for them to quiet down before I speak again. Part of me is second-guessing this, but I know Frisco and Quarter are right. I don't lay low. I face shit head-on. I know most of you have heard that I haven't had the best week, and damned if life didn't sucker-punch me with that one. There are a few aws, but I keep going. It occurred to me tonight when we were sitting on my back deck shooting skeet that your character ain't forged when things are going your way. It's forged when shit gets ugly, messy, and hard. It's about how you pick yourself up from those cheap shots and keep trucking forward, ain't it? Another roar of approval. So instead of keeping the world out of my business, I want to invite you into my shitty week so we can get over it together. Because I bet some of you have had a rough week too. Beers are raised and more people yell, but my eyes are on the dark-haired woman at the bar, her mouth open just enough to show her shock. Yeah, sugar, you too. That's what I thought. So, how about we sing some songs and have a good time tonight and forget about all that crap weighing us down, because we're better than that. Tomorrow, the Lord is going to bless us with a new day, and that's something to be thankful for. The cheers and screams threaten to shake the walls of this place. That's what I like to hear. The buzz of adrenaline filling my veins is stronger than at my last show in front of 30,000. This is what I've been missing. This is who I am. I turn to Frisco and Quarter. You ready? They both give me a nod, and with a glance at the drummer, we get ready to rock.
16. Boone Thrasher's words ricochet in my chest like some kind of fundamental truth. As Hope pushes two drinks toward me. They're both doubles. I'm going to be working my tits off until we close, so if you need something, come on back behind the bar and help yourself. The guitar's wail and Boone Thrasher's low, husky growl fills the bar as he begins to sing. If I'd been wearing panties, it would have been a lost cause within moments, but at least I'd keep them on. I see at least a dozen women yanking thongs down their legs from beneath their skirts to throw them at the stage. Ew! Within minutes, it's like a tornado blew through Victoria's Secret and dropped its load right in front of Boone Thrasher. A normal occurrence for him, I assume. How is it possible his voice can be that intoxicatingly sexy? And why did it sound like he was talking directly to me when he said all that stuff a few moments ago? If I turn back around, will I think he's singing to me, too? Right, Rip. A shaft of disappointment stabs into me, but I bury it. It's not like I want him to sing to me. I have my rule for a reason. Besides, Boone Thrasher has trouble stamped so plainly on his every feature. A woman would have to be blind not to see it. I am not blind, I assure myself as I toss back another drink. Besides, this is what celebrities do. They walk into a bar like they own the place and take it over. No asking permission and no asking forgiveness. Although, from how fast the booze is flowing with Hope and her bartenders hustling to keep up with people tossing money at them, there's no need to ask for either. Boone Thrasher is probably welcome here any time he gets the wild idea in his head to step through the door. The alcohol hits me harder with the double shot, and a plan starts taking shape in my buzzed brain. There's this woman who contacts all the bars and clubs in town and gives them a number to text when there's a celebrity or a professional athlete sighting. Then she sends out an alert to thousands of people who subscribe to her service. And the place is mobbed. The tipster gets a hefty fee for it if the sighting turns out to be real, or so I've been told. I've got her number, but I've never used it. It's not like the fishbowl is a hotbed of celebrity sightings, but even the handful of times Zane Frisco came to the bar, I never considered it, although I could definitely use the money. Even broke, it seems I've got standards. Or maybe because that's just not the kind of person I am. I have to wonder if Brandy knows about it, because she probably would have been the first to call something like that in. Anything for a dollar. Maybe it's fate that she's never shown up for work on a day that Frisco has been in. Even if some other big shot came into the fishbowl, I don't think I could do it. Scratch that, I know I couldn't. It gives me an icky feeling just thinking about it. Besides, the fishbowl is a black mark on tourist maps. Murder scene of country music legend Gil Green and his mistress, Rhonda Fisher. Cold case still unsolved. My life would have been totally different if Gil Green had never set foot in our bar. Sadness for what might have been is drowned out by irrational anger directed at stars who wear entitlement like a second skin and take whatever they want, not caring about the broken families they leave in their wake. I reach for my drink and tip it back. I'm getting shit-faced tonight.
17. With every song the crowd sings along with me, I shed another layer of my memories of Amber and any plans I might have had for our future. I throw myself into the music, and by the time I'm almost finished with the set, I feel like the man I was before I met her, before I let myself get sucked into her lies and bullshit. Frisco was right. This is exactly what I needed tonight. Not just for the gossip rags to pick up and circulate, but for me. How about one more song? Everyone in the bar hollers, and I nod at Frisco and Quarter. They both know what I'm thinking. When I wrote this song, I thought I was writing it about a woman I'd already met, but we all know how that turned out. Now I realize I wrote this song about the woman I'll eventually find who will ride shotgun with me for life. The chorus of me and I want to ride with you grows louder and louder until I strum my guitar and we blow the roof off the bar with my latest single. When Frisco, Quarter, and I step off the stage, security crowds around us and leads us toward the back door. Easier to get you out this way, Mr. Thrasher. The crowd's a little wild tonight. Fine with me. Hold up, Frisco yells. What? I ain't done with tonight. I'm ready to do some real drinking and partying now. Quarter nods, and the head security guy looks back at me. Up to you, man. These guys have created a wall, but I can still see the hands of fans trying to touch me. I've accomplished what I came here to do, and there's no reason for me to stay. I'm straight. You guys can hang around as long as you want. They both reach out, and we swap handshakes. Catch you later, brother. You slayed it tonight. This is going to be on every gossip site within hours. Boone Thrasher is back. I open my mouth to say that I never left, but Frisco and Quarter are already sliding out from between the security crew and disappearing into the raucous crowd. You ready? One of the guys asks me. Yeah, let's move. We start walking again, this time slower as they cut through the mass of people. We're about 10 feet from the end of the bar when I see her again. Ripley. Except she's not alone. She's pinned against the wood by two men and has a panicked look in her eyes as she struggles to get out from between them. I grab the shoulder of the guy in front of me. Hold up. You got a bigger security problem than me, man. He stops as I point at Ripley where she's yelling to a bartender. The woman flipping bottles doesn't catch her distress signal. We'll get you out of here first and then we'll come back to take care of her. She'll be fine for a few minutes. Ripley flings out both hands and shoves one man a foot back, but he's on her again in less than a second. You got your priorities screwed up, man. Women first every fucking time. I duck between the two men and head for Ripley. There's nothing that pisses me off more than a man putting his hands on a woman who doesn't want it. And when it comes to this woman, I'm seeing red. Hey, assholes, what the fuck do you think you're doing? I dodge the grasping fingers of women trying to get to me and lose my hat in the process, but I finally get the attention of the guys trapping Ripley. None of your business, the guy in a cowboy hat that looks like he bought it today slurs as Ripley's wild gray eyes meet mine. Move along. You made it my business when she shoved you back and you couldn't take a hint. Who the hell do you think you are? Without my hat on, I suppose I don't look the same as I did on stage, but before I can tell him exactly who I am, Ripley knees him in the balls. Triumph fills her face as he goes down, but his hand lashes out and snags her shirt, yanking it down so her tits, spilling out over her bra cups, are bared. I rear back to deliver a blow, but security beats me to it, yanking the douchebag away. But Ripley's shirt goes with him as his grip tears it down the center. Her hands go to her chest, trying to cover herself, and I'm more worried about her than dumbass number two. Mistake. A fist comes flying out of my peripheral vision and glances off my chin. Another of the security guys dives at the man, taking him down. Get her, we're leaving. The man who had initially said they'd handle Ripley after they had me clear takes her by the arm and pulls her along. Something about seeing another man's hands on her after she fended off two dicks who couldn't take no for an answer rubs me the wrong fucking way. Let go of her. His gaze cuts to mine as I reach out and wrap an arm around her shoulders, blocking anyone's view of her bare skin with my body. We barrel through the crowd to the back door. When they push it open, I'm half expecting the flashing cameras and shouted questions of the paps, but instead it's quiet. You got a car around here? Security asks. I nod, but that's not my main concern. I grab the back of my t-shirt and strip it off over my head. I hold it out to Ripley, but she stands frozen. Take it. Put it on. Her eyes are fixed on me, but she still doesn't move.
18. My ears ring from the noise level of the bar, but Boone Thrasher's words cut through loud and clear.
Take it. Put it on.
I can't move. I'm stunned and speechless. Sweet baby Jesus, why is his shirt off? He shoves the t-shirt at me again, but when I still don't move, Boone Thrasher, country music's bad boy, proceeds to put it on me.
Arm. Other arm.
My body follows his commands, but I'm dumbstruck. His body is a work of art, all hard muscles set off by intricate tattoos.
Where's your car, Mr. Thrasher? I'm a block over. You want us to escort you?
I think Boone shakes his head, but I'm too busy staring at his pecs and abs. Good God, those can't be real.
No, we'll attract less attention without you. If you're sure, I'm sure.
Boone wraps an arm around my shoulders, and I'm so drunk and stunned by his physical perfection that I stumble along beside him. His t-shirt hangs like a dress on me, but it doesn't stop me from climbing into his beautiful car when we reach it. Where are we going? I ask, but he shuts the passenger door without replying. When he slides into the driver's seat, I stare at him with only the glow of the streetlight illuminating the interior.
I'm taking you home before you end up raped and God knows what else.
The harsh tone of his voice straightens my spine.
I was fine. I would have handled it.
He reaches over me, his arm brushing my chest as he snags the seatbelt and buckles it into place before taking care of his own.
Sure you were. You were handling yourself right into being the meat in a tourist sandwich, whether you wanted it or not. You don't know that. You're drunk and you're female. That puts you at a disadvantage. You work in a bar. You should know firsthand what can happen when girls like you go out drinking by themselves. Why would you set yourself up to be a target for assholes like that?
I narrow my eyes.
I'm sorry, but most of us don't have an entourage to follow us everywhere we go, no matter the time of day. And I wasn't alone. My best friend is the head bartender.
He shakes his head and mumbles something I can't make out.
Excuse me? I didn't quite catch what you said, Mr. Country Superstar, who can walk into any bar and take the stage and have an entire Victoria's Secret worth of panties get thrown at him.
I know I'm babbling, but I'm too drunk to care. In my head, Boone Thrasher is tied up with everything I hate, and hauling me out of a bar and lecturing me just pisses me off even more, regardless of how amazing he looks shirtless. Quit thinking about that, Ripley.
I said you're drunk. And you're lucky I was there.
Boone's tone comes out gruff and too much like a reprimand for my taste. I hold up both hands.
Oh, I'm lucky, am I? You don't know shit, jackass. I know you're drunk.
Yeah, well, you're the one with no shirt on. He turns the key and the engine roars to life as he shoots me a look that I don't currently have the vocabulary to describe.
You're really gonna bust my balls for giving you my shirt so you're not walking around topless?
Memories of the oh shit moment when my shirt ripped down the center, and plenty of people in the bar got a view of my sheer bra enter my foggy brain. If not for the wall of security around Boone coming to the rescue, my humiliation would burn a whole lot hotter.
You didn't have to give me your shirt,
I say, not coming up with any other kind of argument. I would have been fine. I glance down as he shakes his head. Holy crap, I'm wearing Boone Thrasher's shirt. I don't know why it's just occurring to me, but I lift the hem to my nose and sniff. The scent of clean, woodsy man fills my nose. It smells too good for my peace of mind. But still, I take another deep breath. Yum.
What the hell are you doing?
My head jerks left and I find Boone staring at me. Oh my God, he just busted me sniffing his shirt. Jesus H. Christ, I'm such a creeper.
Nothing, nothing at all.
The words all come out in a single rush of breath. Desperate to change the subject, I watch as he puts the car in gear.
Where are you taking me?
Home, where you should have stayed if you were planning to get hammered. Now I just need you to tell me where that is.
His tone, a mix of scolding and condescension, pushes me over the edge, and I decide that I've had enough. I can get myself home. I go for the door handle, yank it open, and try to climb out, but the seatbelt snaps me back in place.
What are you doing? Close the damn door.
I fumble to release the buckle, but Boone is quicker, reaching across me and wrenching the door shut, then slamming his hand down on the lock.
I was getting out.
Boone shakes his head.
You're nuts, you know that. You think I'm letting you out here when I wouldn't leave you alone in a bar? Not a chance. If you got a hurl, let me know. Because if you puke in this car, I'll send you the bill for the cleanup.
I'm gearing up to rip him a new one until he adds the last part about the bill. The threat steals my thunder, and instead produces a cackle, the likes of which has never left my lips before.
You think that's funny?
Boone demands, probably thinking I'm batshit crazy, and rightly so.
What's funny is you think I could pay it. Maybe if I'd sold you out the other night. Maybe then I'd have an extra $10 to do a damn thing, but I don't. I respected your privacy. I didn't even hit you up for cash to keep quiet like my cousin did.
The past and the present collide in my head as I continue my rant.
You want to know why I didn't? Because I don't need the fishbowl famous for another country music legend dying there. Guess you're lucky you made it out alive.
19. Ripley's drunk. Not even drunk. She's blitzed, hammered, shit-faced. And she's the cutest friggin' drunk I've ever seen, even if she's a little on the crazy side. Her words about dying stop my thoughts cold. Wait, what are you talking about? You. Good thing you didn't go to the bathroom or you could be another dot on the tourist map showing where you died. That's when it hits me. I have heard of the fishbowl before. Everyone has. How did I not remember? Rumor has it that the owner's wife was Gil Green's mistress, and they were screwing in the bathroom when they were both murdered while there was a bar full of people just outside the door. No one heard their cries for help, but the gossips couldn't decide if it was because of the performance going on right then, or if they didn't have a chance to scream. The owner was cleared because he was serving drinks during the murder, and there was no evidence he hired a hitman to kill his cheating wife and her lover. No other suspects were ever seriously questioned because no alternative motive could be identified. According to gossip, business tanked practically overnight, except for the gawkers. All the little things that Ripley had said the first night I met her and the next morning when I picked up my car finally come together to complete the puzzle. Ripley's mother was murdered in the bar she's fighting to keep afloat.